where do we differ on Jill?
Well, I know I've heard you talk about how one of the main issues for Jill throughout the whole thing is trust, but I don't think that's the main focus.
I know we're supposed to talk about Silverchair reading group stuff, but so we got into a potentially dangerous conversation here a moment ago about Voyage of the Dawn Treader. So clarify this for me. So if for Voyage of the Dawn Treader, Twigs, you have more positive or negative things to say about it, the movie?
Well, I'd probably have more negative things to say about it, but that doesn't mean I don't like it. I do like it.
It doesn't mean that?
No, it doesn't. It's very complicated.
But
when I like the source material as much as I like the Chronicles of Narnia, I am very picky about adaptations, but I'm also very tolerant and forgiving about whether or not I like them. And with Voyage of the Dawn Treader, I know.
So you're picky, but you're very tolerant.
Yeah. I will tear it to pieces, but overall I'll say, yeah, I liked it.
You know what? I think it's a shame you haven't really seen many of the Star Wars films, because I think you'd make a great Star Wars fan. You would love it and do nothing but complain about it at the same time. So yeah, you'd make a great Star Wars fan. Anyhoozles, that's a word now. I didn't ever quite get your full opinion on Joe Johnston. Well, I guess we kind of did. We chatted about it. But so you've not seen Captain America, right?
No, I have not seen Captain America.
Okay. The reason I bring this up is because you were talking about recently how you don't like reluctant hero stories, right?
Yes. I suppose they're fine. But if the source material is not a reluctant hero story, then I don't like them.
Okay. So here's where we differ, I think, on adaptations is... To me, it's, what you want out of a movie is a good movie, ultimately. If the book is a good book, awesome, but let's make a good movie. If there are things that work well in the movie, does that mean they're also, are there things that work well in the book, does that mean they're going to work well in the movie? So I think the number one thing I want Silver Chair to be is a good movie. Like, if it's word for word from the book, but I don't like the movie, well, that's not a good adaptation. It's, you know, they took a good book and turned it into a bad movie. Whereas I think you're just wanting to be reminded of the book, you know?
Probably. Yeah. And I can't imagine how they could make it into a bad movie with word for word stuff.
Want me to give you an example?
Sure.
Okay, I know you love the BBC versions, and I think the Silver Chair is the most decent of the BBC versions.
Which makes sense, because that's my least favorite of the
really?
Ones.
See, to me, I think the Silver Chair is, because they don't have to deal with talking animals, like, very much. That's part of it.
Well, that would help.
That's part of it. But I don't know, to me, it's something you can watch. The Silver Chair is watchable. I guess Dawn Treader kind of is too, but it gets really slow in places. The Prince Caspian's the one that's unwatchable, I think. A BBC.
I prefer the Prince Caspian BBC to the Walden one any day.
Oh! Burn! Oh, I don't. I think it doesn't work. It's not even a story. It's just a bunch of stuff that happens. At least the Prince... Okay, I guess we should get to Silver Chair reading group stuff.
Or we never will.
All right, so, great moderator of Silver Chair Reading Group, how has the response been the past couple weeks? I know the answer, but I'll ask anyway.
It's been really good. We've gotten a lot of interesting comments, some relating to adaptation, and it's been a lot of fun.
Complete coincidence, of course, there's a movie coming out.
Yes,
during the reading group.
Complete coincidence.
This really worked out well. It's actually kind of true, because we started doing this before the director was announced.
Yes,
so.
We decided that it was probably about time to do a new reading group, and then all of a sudden we have director news.
And there's actually things happening in the reading group for a while, because
yes.
The Dawn Treader reading group kind of became a ghost town after a while, right?
Yeah, it did. But then it would pick up, and then it would be a ghost town again, and there were a couple people that hadn't finished, and I was trying to give them ample time to finish.
Right.
Finally gave up.
Right. Okay, cool. This will be my first. I posted a little bit in the Dawn Treader reading group, but I guess this is really my first reading group. C.S. Lewis said a book was no good to him until he'd read it twice. And he talks a lot about the importance of rereading books, which I usually have much time to do. With Narnia, certainly I read him a million times. But there's even a great I think it's an audio transcription of a conversation Lewis was having with some friends where they asked him, what'd you think of this book? And he seemed really reluctant to answer. And he's like, well, you have to understand, I've only read it once. As if, you know, well, I'm not even really sure if I can talk about it yet. Anyway, so love rereading, love diving back into Narnia, mm-hmm. what's going on in the Silverchair reading group. And maybe Erebus will have an opinion once she's done playing with the box.
Yeah. Hopefully she doesn't try to eat the box.
So just to clarify, that's Twiggs's cat. So you're probably really confused about that.
Yes, and she does not understand the concept of being quiet so that we can record.
That's fine.
So
I don't know the concept of being quiet either. So that's why I do podcasting. Okay, so Silverchair Reading Group. Where's my phone? Because I'm going to follow along. Here it is.
All right.
What's going on?
So, one question that I'm particularly interested is question five we have in the reading group is, Lewis writes, the head said that they were interesting psychological cases and sent for them and talked to them for hours. And if you knew the right sort of things to say to the head, the main result was that you became rather a favorite than otherwise. And I asked, do you think that's possible that something like this could happen at a school, and why or why not? We had some pretty good examples.
So I think you mispronounced one of those sentences.
Probably.
You have to say, interesting psychological cases. That's how the audiobook says, and I always love that. Anyway, sorry.
Well, thank you for that correction.
Yes. Erebus wants to participate. That's
yes.
Okay. Maybe for the Horse and His Boy podcast.
I don't think she'll wait that long.
Okay, so education's your thing.
Yes.
That's your field.
Yes.
So what are your thoughts on this one? Could this kind of thing actually happen at a school?
Oh, yeah. I'm sure it could. Especially, you know,
boys and girls going to the same school?
I know.
That could actually happen?
Yeah, it could.
Co-educational.
I'm not sure how. I don't know a lot about boarding schools. So that might have been very unusual for a boarding school to be co-ed. But,
oh, I assume it was, if Lewis bothered to mention it.
Yes. But, yeah, I mean, there are so many theories and fads and ideas in education that, like, as soon as you learn one, you're already outdated and they have another new idea that the schools are implementing.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's a lot about, well, why are the kids doing this behavior? How do we redirect? How do we, you know, figure out what's going on and stuff? And I could see that they would definitely say, if it was interest, that somebody would be there and trying to psychoanalyze the kids, like, why are they being bullies? And kids are smart, and these kids are probably, they're older, so they know.
Yeah, and according to the time when they're 9 years old.
But I'm assuming that some of them are older, so multi-level
school.
Yeah. So the bullies are the bigger ones, so they're probably early teens, mm-hmm. maybe. I don't know a lot about British school system. Mm-hmm. But kids are smart. They know how to push the correct buttons. They know how to push the buttons to get a negative reaction. And they know how to suck up, mm-hmm. basically.
And
so,
Lisa certainly knew how to do that, at least the last term.
And I know that if you spend enough time, even with the most difficult kid, they can manage to get into your heart, and you do end up forming a connection to them.
Speaking from experience here, I assume.
But that doesn't mean that...
With her students, not with herself. Or maybe not, I don't know.
But that doesn't mean that most teachers are able, and people are able to still do the necessary consequences for the actions,
mm-hmm.
but I could easily see how, taken to a higher degree, they wouldn't care about that anymore.
Of Experiment House, which Experiment House, now that you say that, put in that light, is, you know, I've never given much thought to the fact that it's called Experiment House, but I mean, is that supposed to speak to, oh, they're trying very, you know, modern ideas of education?
Yeah, that would be my guess. And I think that's what the BBC radio drama said, something like, has used to saying.
You and Edmund are going home, and I've got to go back to that awful school.
Why is it so awful, Eustace?
They call it Experiment House, and before I went there, I thought that meant I'd be doing a lot of exciting experiments, with microscopes and Bunsen burners and things. But in fact, we're the experiment.
Oh, that sounds horrid.
It is.
Oh, okay. So they actually kind of elaborate on that.
Yeah.
How much in the movie can they really get in as far as developing all the politics of Experiment House? They obviously can't develop it to the same. I mean, Lewis, just in one page, gives you quite a lot.
Well, it's interesting that you say that, because Reaper Cheap 775 on the forum basically said, I have a feeling that the filmmakers are going to misunderstand Experiment House and its function in the story.
Well, what is its function in the story? I think it's more like, you know, Lewis, most of the Narnia books start with maybe all of them, actually, just a couple pages of here's a specific time and place and here's what's happening. And sort of setting the scene, if you will. And I guess Experiment House, I know I can relate to the darkness and the despair at the beginning of Silver Chair, because Lewis gives me something that I relate to so much. And that's the feeling of the beginning of a semester. In this case, mm-hmm. I think they say it's a 13-week term and there's still 11 weeks to go.
Yes.
I personally, I don't know how, okay, no offense, I know education's your field. But when I was in college, first thing I would do when I got all my syllabi laid out in front of me right at the beginning of the semester, and I would mark down, when's the very last day? When am I done? And I think any time during the semester you could come up to me and say, hey, how many more days till school ends? And I could probably tell you. And we were just reading Lewis's essay called My First School, where he talks about that feeling of dread of being at the beginning of a semester, and how, interestingly enough, that actually made him, he thinks, it may be more predisposed to Christianity, because that idea of longing, and it doesn't surprise him that the idea that there should be two worlds doesn't surprise him, because he just grew up always, when's the semester over? When's the semester over? When is freedom coming? So I see Experiment House's function in the story, and I really hope they get this in the movie, is establishing a sense of despair, hopelessness, nowhere to turn. It feels like this will never end, because when we get to Narnia, it's the same thing. Caspian's about to die without an heir. And there's it's a dull autumn day in Experiment House, and we get to Narnia, and it's just as gloomy.
They get past Aslan's country.
Exactly, yeah.
It's a huge contrast between at first.
And I love that. I love that it's a rainy day and they open the door and the light just kind of shines in there. I guess we kind of dipped into one of the other questions by accident of the atmosphere in the stories.
Easy to do.
Yeah, but that's important, is that they get in the movie. It's about despair. It's about hopelessness. And the feeling that it's never going to change. And that's why the epilogue at the end is so important, I think. Show that there is actually ultimate hope in Narnia somewhere, with Caspian coming back to life.
But it's going to be a challenge, because I was thinking about that, because, you know, Lewis does it all in a paragraph.
Yeah.
Now, that's not going to work.
Is it a paragraph? I mean,
well,
I think there's a little more.
It's a little more than a paragraph.
He does it very quickly.
But he does it very quickly, and you get some of the main ideas within.
About two paragraphs.
Two paragraphs, yeah. Something like that.
Which he was a master at doing a lot with so little.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And you get not only the students' feeling on the school, but, you know, Lewis's feeling as well. But how?
And says something about Jill, too.
Yes. And how do you do that in the movie?
A short space of time. And set up the tone and the characters, obviously.
Yeah. Because we don't want to spend a long time at Experiment House. Uh-huh. But there's so much going on there.
You can't get all the detail, but if you can get the feeling of it, that's the thing.
And I don't know. I know with the BBC, they started it out with the kids making fun of Jill and her name.
Someone in the forum had the idea of starting with Jill being bullied, but maybe they've like locked her inside a locker in the dark, and to tease her. And they won't let her out. And that could play in later when she has claustrophobia. And like, you could kind of echo that image. If you're listening, post a comment and say, yep, that was me. But I thought that might be a cool way to start it.
I'm William O'Flaherty. This is the C.S. Lewis Minute. Were you aware that C.S. Lewis tied the knot twice to the same woman? I'm not making this up. It may sound like one of those urban legends, but C.S. Lewis actually married Joy Davenman two times. Why did he do this? The first time around, Lewis was just being a friend to Joy. She was a native of New York who was at risk of being deported from England. so they had a civil ceremony for his British citizenship to be extended to her. Interestingly enough, Lewis didn't want this to be public knowledge. But then she became ill, and Lewis realized how much he cared for her and had a Christian wedding in the hospital at her bedside to proclaim his love for her. Maybe you know that part of the story from Shadowlands, a less than perfect movie where Anthony Hopkins plays Lewis. Learn more about C.S. Lewis by visiting my website, EssentialCSLewis.com.
Another reason I really wanted to have this conversation is, so basically our entire friendship right now is we start talking and then, oh, wait till there's microphones recording. So we pretty much can't talk at all.
Pretty much.
So you said, I think we really disagree on Jill. And I was like, really? Why is that? And I said, wait, don't tell me. So why do we, obviously the first parts of the story are all about establishing the tone, but also establishing the characters. And most people in the reading group seem to agree Jill is clearly the main character.
Yes.
So,
and I agree that.
Where do we differ on Jill?
Well, I know I've heard you talk about how one of the main issues for Jill throughout the whole thing is trust. Now, I can see where it's to some degree trust, but I don't think that's the main focus necessarily. If you go to chapter one, Jill is willing to trust Eustace that she gets suspicious, but then he swears and
when he's saying he had been to another world and all that.
Yeah. She gets suspicious, he swears, and she's okay, I'm in. So it's not maybe necessarily that she can't or that trust is hard for her, but there's a lot of other stuff that goes on and that will progress throughout the book as well.
Well, I don't know. I mean, it does say, says, now that they were talking in whispers, Jill somehow felt it easier to believe. Then suddenly a horrible suspicion came over her, and she said so fiercely that for a moment she looked like a tigress, if I find you've been pulling my leg, I'll never speak to you again. Never, never, never. And by the way, if you're listening, casting director, sure, I'll play Jill. Brian Carnell, you can email me glumpuddle@narniweb.com. Here's to the ones who dream. Where on earth was I going with that? So I think Jill still does have she immediately, although, Scrub is talking in whispers and manages to lull learn for a second, I think she's reluctant to really jump on board. Understandably, though, he's talking about it been to another world.
But she does jump on board. Can you imagine?
True. She puts out her arms and says, Aslan, 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 and all that.
Yeah. So, where she, I'm not saying that she doesn't necessarily have trust problems, but I don't think that's the main thing.
And it sounds like Fantasia Kitty would agree with you. We've discussed that in the forum.
Yes.
So what is the main thing with Jill? Because especially at the beginning of the story, we have to start her arc and development. So it's very important how you start.
Yes. Well, going with the first chapter, since that's what we're focusing on, and I haven't, I just read the book, but I was thinking of...
For the fifth or sixth time.
Yeah.
For the record. Okay.
Yes. But I was thinking of what interesting questions could I ask in a reading group. I wasn't totally analyzing, I'm going to analyze Jill's character.
Right.
But I did reread the first chapter just today. And with Jill, she seems to be kind of emotional and very defensive. Mm-hmm. I would say that, when we see Jill in this chapter, we see such a range of her personality. Mm-hmm. We see her crying, understandably so. It's mm-hmm. not fun to be bullied. We see her mm-hmm. taking Eustace's head off. Also, he did kind of sound like he was doing a lecture.
Right.
So it's understandable. So, and then she, has her peppermint, calms down.
I mean, it's peppermint. Yeah.
Yes.
Calm everything down.
And then, they're whispering. She's willing to trust Eustace to believe what he's saying. And
all of a sudden, she wants to be friends, basically.
Yeah. And then all of a sudden, she becomes suspicious. And I think Lewis describes her as being as fierce as a tigress.
Yeah.
So that's another,
That's true.
A little bit of a temper.
So she's very... She's, would you say, emotionally a little unstable? She has these mood swings. She has, high mountains and deep valleys.
Yes.
And then, she seems like she's so committed when Aslan gives her the four signs, but then she gets so easily distracted.
Yes. And she despises Eustace for his fear on the cliff. She's not just kind of disgusted or really, come on, Eustace, it's just a cliff. she despises him.
You think if response. You just found your way into another world, you'd be a little more likely to make friends and just like, oh, what do we do? You think that would just bring them together, but and she then, still finds a way to get offended.
Yes.
And maybe what is it? What is the reason again? It's because she's on the edge of the cliff and he's like, get back from the edge. And he's like, oh, come on, I can handle myself or whatever.
Because he was scared is why she despises him.
Mm-hmm.
And then, but she's also upset. Well, it starts out by saying, I think, that she has a good head for heights.
Right.
So that's making her feel confident. And then she sees Eustace and probably doesn't understand his fear because she doesn't have it.
Right.
And so she, you know, despises it. Because mm-hmm. I mean, what kind of an example does she have at Experiment House?
Right.
They're going.
She's got a bunch of bullies.
Yeah.
And when there's certainly no one in a position of authority or role model that she could. Okay. So then ultimately she has to learn, I guess, would you say what to not let her emotions run her life and to.
Yeah. I would say that.
That she's so easily swayed by her emotions, I guess. Yeah. Is that what you would say?
Yeah. And.
Okay.
Easily distracted, too.
Uh-huh. Hot baths at Harfang and oh, bother the signs.
Yes.
Now, I wouldn't disagree and say I those are great observations. I think about Jill being really emotional and having high mountains and deep valleys and maybe kind of impulsive. I wouldn't disagree with that. But again, I would say that does come back to trust. I think that when they're on the journey, they're encountering things that, well, obviously it seems like we should do this. You know, obviously we should go to Harfang. We'll get hot baths and they'll feed us and it feels right. But what she really needs to do is trust that, hey, remember Aslan, who obviously knew everything about you and was obviously very powerful. He blew you all the way to Narnia. Not to mention he's a scary lion and, you know, he's very powerful. He made such a, do you remember that? And now you've completely forgotten it because you're hungry and you're cold. What she needs to do there is trust Aslan, an authority figure, knows what he's talking about, even though by all appearances at the moment, he doesn't. And that's the example Puddleglum sets for her when he says, you know, Aslan, at the end of the book, do we free Prince Relaine from the chair? And he says, Aslan didn't tell Pol what would happen. He only told her what to do. So, and she sees Puddleglum say, well, yeah, really, this guy, lunatic might get up and kill us right now, but we have to trust Aslan that even if he does kill us, it'll somehow turn out okay. Anyway, which, by the way, we established the idea of a Narnian afterlife at the end of the book. so the idea that Puddleglum's like, well, one way or another, it'll all turn out okay. So I do see where you're coming from. I think that's perfectly valid to say that it's about, you know, Jill being sort of tossed about by her emotions, and she needs to learn not to let that happen. And I do agree with that. I think that's perfectly valid. For me personally, maybe it's because I've had trust issues in my life with struggling to emotionally invest in people. When you invest in someone, there's always the possibility they're going to let you down. And if there was zero possibility of them letting you down, it's probably not a meaningful relationship, honestly. You have to be vulnerable. You have to take risk. And that's something that I've had to struggle to learn in my life. So I really latch onto that part of the book and connect with that. So it could just be that just because of my personal struggles, I'm really latching onto that.
Yeah. And I mean, trust is a part of it, but a lot of it's also, you know, doing your duty and sticking
to the... Yeah, someone brought that up, the theme of duty in the forum, which that's not something I've really... Again, don't disagree with it. I think it's from... I read it kind of quickly, but it seems valid. It's not something that jumps out at me personally, but a few people in the forum have talked about the theme of duty in the Silver Chair.
Because she lets herself be distracted away from what she is supposed to do.
Yeah. Do you know who it was in the forum that said that, since you've got the computer in front of you?
Yeah, I'm trying to see if I can...
I've got my little iPhone screen here. Let's see.
Remember if that's...
I think I can just do a word search.
I'm trying to remember that's... You remember which chapter it was?
Oh, it would have been chapter one, wouldn't it? Let's see here. For me, Silver Chair is all about duty. That was Reepicheep 775.
Yeah.
So would you kind
of... Oh, yeah, that I have bolded here on my notes. Because we're talking about...
Well, no wonder you couldn't find it. It was right
exactly,
in front of...
Exactly, that's how it is right in front of me.
That's how it works for me. Like, yeah, it happens to me and my wife all the time. Like, where is it? Where is it? Oh, it's right there. Well, no wonder I didn't see it. It was right in front of me. Anyway.
Yeah, because this is going back to talking about why Experiment House is important. We seem to be talking in circles.
That's okay. Wow, we've come full circle.
You know, he says, I think Experiment House is important thematically.
Talking to the mic, sorry.
Sorry.
Because I'm going to be editing this one, so talking to the mic.
Oh, okay. So if you're not editing it, then I can talk about what I want.
If Minotaur Frasslin's editing it, then whatever. It'll just give him all the problems.
Got it.
Not my problem.
All right. Anyway. So back to what Reepa Cheep said. However, I think Experiment House is important thematically because for me, Silverchair is all about duty. And both Jill and Eustace, though of course Eustace thinks differently now, have been brought up in an environment that not only doesn't punish bad behavior, it doesn't even seem to think the bully's behavior is bad. To the powers that be at Experiment House, those who do evil are not to be blamed or corrected, but simply to be cured. And Jill and Eustace are essentially being raised without any concept of personal responsibility or moral conviction.
Okay, and then Jill is given this quest, well, all of them, this quest to go find Prince Rillian. And they're getting easily distracted and doing other things. So they're saying they lack a sense of duty and responsibility. Okay.
Yes. And that's kind of where, you know, I wouldn't say necessarily that Jill seems kind of fast to trust and then maybe she will or she won't change her mind.
At what point in the book you're saying early on?
Just in general, because when she trusts Eustace for a while and then she becomes suspicious. Uh-huh. Jill and Eustace trust the Lady of the Green Curl, no questions asked.
Because it feels right to them. And
yeah.
And I think the question is, clearly Aslan should be trusted more.
Yes.
And of course, it's their duty. This is what they were told to do anyway.
It's their duty.
Okay.
So I could see how it's kind of about discernment. They're not very good at discerning what they're supposed to do.
Uh-huh.
I mean, they've got these four signs and they can't even follow those.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll trust.
He lays it out for them.
He lays it out for them, and they still manage to not
muff the signs.
Muff the signs.
Yeah. So we're not going to. Again, I wouldn't disagree with any of that and say that duty and, Jill's emotions and discernment. And I wouldn't say that. Oh, that's not a part of this letter. Clearly, those are themes in it. And if that's what jumps out at you the most, that's perfectly valid and that's great. But me personally, I see trust as the thread that ties a lot of these things together. Because if they just go through all this and trust that Aslan knows what he's talking about, then all this, well, yes, even though your emotions are telling you one thing, yes, even though the Lady of the Green Curtle is saying this, just trust that Aslan, that it will somehow come out okay if you trust Aslan. So that for me kind of ties it together because that's, like I talked about before, it speaks to me on such a personal level. So then obviously in the early... for the movie, then in the opening scenes, they have to establish, like, do we show Jill being really emotional and being like, if we're going to kind of go with that as a part of her character,
mm-hmm.
then we have to see her being impulsive and easily swayed. And
yeah.
Anyway, she has to become essentially a stronger person at the end, not so easily swayed by her emotions.
Yeah.
Huh.
For the most part, I mean, I understand why she was crying.
Mm-hmm.
That makes sense.
Yeah, it's a hopeless situation.
She was maybe a little hard on Eustace because he was different. But then
mm-hmm.
when you're upset, you're not rational.
Uh-huh.
When you've been crying, you're pretty much... I work with children. When they're crying, there's not a whole... You can't reason with them. It doesn't work. You have to calm them down first, and then maybe you can reason with them. Maybe.
Probably not, though.
Probably not. So...
okay.
And then you've got... She's calm. She's willing to trust. And Eustace, and the next minute she's biting his head off again.
Okay, so we just need the Narnie Webbers listening to settle this. In the discussion forum, what do you think of all this? Is it, you know, duty and emotions and trust and some of the things you've been talking about? You know, Twigs and I have talked about what really speaks to us the most, but what speaks to you the most? We really want to hear about it. This is important in the early stages of the film. They got to figure out what's the emotional arc and what's the theme. And because if you don't have a theme that ties it all together, then it's what's the point? Okay, we went on an adventure and it was entertaining for a couple hours. But why? Why should we care about this? And if we don't have anything that relates to our lives, we connect with on some level, then it's just a bunch of stuff on the screen. Just spectacle, as Johnston would describe it. Anyway, so we'll leave it to Narnie Webbers to settle this.
Yes, and there is a theme... thread. Is that in the general movie discussion?
There is. In general movie discussion, I think Fantasia Kitty started it. Actually, he was saying, I don't know if I agree with Glumpuddle on the trust thing. So maybe I'm getting some... Again, and to be fair, like, I'm not saying that's what it is. That's absolutely what Lewis intended. It may not have been. It's the theme that speaks the most to me. And so that's the one, obviously, I tend to harp on the most. Cool. I think that's a full discussion. Honestly, we had a few more we wanted to get to, but
yeah, well, we knew that probably wasn't going to happen.
That's okay. Thanks to everyone in the forum for posting. Were there a few posts you wanted to highlight?
Yes. And since we've been talking about, we'll start with Jill's personality. I've got Rose Tree Dryad.
So, the Rose Tree
yes,
Dryad.
Yes, the
one and only.
Yes. Well, I didn't want to type all that. Sorry, Rose. Says that she was very alone and has a very difficult time trusting anyone. And maybe no one has ever really trusted her with anything either until mm-hmm. Eustace shared his secret.
Right.
Because she is so vulnerable and afraid all of the time herself, she despises seeing these things in others. I think that's why she is repulsed when Eustace shows white-faced fear on the cliff.
Yeah. I love Narnia Web, gosh.
Yes, Wagga Werewolf.
Is it Wagga Wagga Werewolf or is this one?
Just
why did I think it was Wagga Wagga Werewolf?
Because it was two on the old forum.
Oh, okay.
I believe.
Wow, okay, I'm not that dumb.
No.
Wagga Werewolf.
Anyway, thinks Jill is self-absorbed.
Self-absorbed, I can see that.
Yeah, and Anhun, hope I'm pronouncing that right, calls
Anhun is what Anhun. I say, but please in the forum Anhun, keep for once and for all. Can you correct that? Give us phonetically
yes,
what that is,
please. thinks of her as vulnerable but very defensive.
Uh huh.
Moonlit Centaur says overall, I think that Jill is quite nice, but has a slight mean streak that she could always get rid of if she tried hard enough.
Again, emotionally, yes, kind of unstable and. Yeah. Whatever she feels in the moment. She's very much living in the present, I guess. Whatever she feels in the moment is what she is.
Yes. Very. And I did want to share a story that Wagga Werewolf posted.
Oh,
this
yeah.
was in response to the question about the school and whether the, you know, talking.
That was possible.
You could talk yourself out of things. Mm-hmm. Yes, I do think something like this circumstance could happen at a school. It has even happened to me when I was sent up to the headmaster to be caned as a small child. And then let's see. The headmaster had copies of three famous paintings on his office walls. And when I asked him about the paintings, he spent so much time explaining who painted these three pictures to me, he forgot to cane me. And then she does qualify.
A tip for Jill.
And he just qualifies and says, but that was a while before I read The Silver Chair. So really and truly, it didn't give me any ideas.
Oh, so that would have been the solution then. Jill and Eustace could have just tried that. It's all about, don't get him started about art and all that. Thank you so much, everyone, for posting in the forum. Please keep posting. You have, how many chapters do you have posted at the time of this recording? I think you have three that are up right now, right?
Yes, Threads? I have okay. three up right now.
But probably by the time this is posted.
Let's see, this will be posted Monday.
This Monday, yeah.
I'm hoping to add two more chapters on Monday.
Okay.
Just to kind of give us a little bit of a cushion.
This is your chance, guys, to give the filmmakers ideas. It's kind of like voting. Like, if you don't vote, you can't complain. So this is essentially your chance to vote and say, hey, this is what is it I think is important to the book. I said it. If the filmmakers want to read it, they can, if they're interested.
Exactly.
All right. So I think my time has come.
Yes, it has.
Enough of that. Let's stump Einar Neweber. Me this time.
Yes.
Alrighty. So once again, the rule is really quick. So Twigs, you're going to ask me a question and I'm going to see if I can answer it. A Narnia trivia question. I'm going to see if I can answer it without having to blow Queen Susan's horn. If I blow Queen Susan's horn and get some help, I can either look up the answer in the book. I'll have 30 seconds to do so. Or I can get multiple choices to choose from, basically. But hopefully. But if I don't want my pride wounded, I'm going to try to not blow Queen Susan's horn. Fire away.
This question was submitted by Narnia Weber Iceberg.
All right. Thank you, Iceberg. Right.
What did Jill think to herself when she heard tapping on her window at Caer Paravel?
I think she wondered if there were giant moths in this country.
Yes, you are right.
Woo! All right. Okay. Yes, and that is... I remember it because that has actually stuck with me because I'm super fascinated by insects, but they were kind of repulsed me at the same time. very conflicted, but the idea of there being giant talking moths is just not, like, you could not possibly make a plush toy out of that. It would not sell.
No.
So no, I wouldn't, no. Give it, wouldn't recommend that one for the filmmakers. Do the talking moth. Anyway, awesome. Thank you, Iceberg. Well, Iceberg, I'm sure you've got ideas for way more questions. I'm sure what you just sent us was just the tip. If you want to submit a trivia question, please email it to podcast@narniweb.com with the subject stump, but please don't include the answer. Twigs, thank you for Silver Chair Chat.
Yes.
And maybe we need to give BBC a watch at some point and we can talk about...
Yes. Well, it's on our schedule some point.
Oh, that's right. We're going to watch that soon, aren't we?
Unless Mel wants to be there for it.
Okay, gotcha. And then, or maybe we should do a commentary for that or something. Twigs and I have kind of different views on BBC. And mine is the correct view. So it's important.
No.